Hello folks, my name is Martin. I will present this previously announced talk on inequality. I hope it contributes to clarify a widely held debate, often clouded by misunderstood realities or even wrong presentations.
Violence broke out ahead of the inauguration of the European Central Bank's new headquarters in Frankfurt. Police cars were set on fire as protesters demonstrated against austerity. Police secured the area around the ECB headquarters and had used water cannons on some demonstrators. Blockupy activists were joined by representatives from leftist political parties like Greece's Syriza and Spain's Podemos. They say the ECB is partly responsible for enforcing policies that activists say are impoverishing parts of Europe.
The recent protests in Frankfurt, with violent actions against property and the German police by some, not only shows the refusal to query the cause of inequality, but also demonstrates the absurdity that the accused European Central Bank actually was put in charge of regulating commercial banks in Europe and providing funds for Greece, both aggressively demanded by the protesters. But most of all, it shows that under the present malaise of global economies, inequality has become a central point of complaint in societies around the world.
Inequality. It's not the finance stupid, it's the stupid finance. To counterbalance the opposing forces of the humane versus the inhumane rule of debt is an impossibility. One or the other must prevail. They are irreconcilable. So it is here that the irresistible force of instinctive self-preservation meets our very movable and flexible humaneness. Our cultural, ethical, and moral values are negotiable. For our continued existence, we must obey the rule of the debt to the letter. Our quality of life and our present mode of survival is the one dictated by debt-created finance. It seems that this is the only type of world we can now imagine. This directive dictates we all compete with the bulk of the other global inhabitants for economic success. Within the restraints of varying global ideologies, our type of debt-created finance forces us to exclude the third world from the export market share. We scramble for profit amid severely limited finance. Without adequate finance from profitable export sales, the domestic market will fail, another sad fact of our debt system. The poor compete with the wealthy the world over. The debt system has an inbuilt scarcity factor. Its funding capacity is always insufficient, always inefficient. Efficiency, in this context, means a focus on profit to the exclusion of all other issues wherever possible. Being a successful competitor requires the financial elimination of your competitor, not the making of a better product. The one that's eliminated in the competitive contest is disadvantaged. This establishes an inequality.
We heard that inequality is not a deliberate act of some people against other people. It appears as an economic survival response. So if we assume it's caused by so-called evil people, then we all must be evil, because we all are forced to act under the same rules, thereby causing some inequality somewhere with someone else. Most importantly, it can be directly linked to the monetary model now being in place since 321 years. Inequalities of other kinds, such as gender inequality, racial inequality, and others, can be traced back to financial inequality. To understand the economic consequences better, this finance method has to be further explained.
A simple calculation shows the impossibility of extracting enough profit from the domestic marketplace. There are never enough incomes in circulation to cover borrowing costs. Export market sales is the only place for recovery of debt costs. It comes via the buyer's borrowed finance in a never-ending cycle of debt and repayment. In our present monetary system, debt-created finance is all there is. Debt finance is money that's borrowed into existence. It is the money we use. Rather hard to borrow enough to pay off debt, wouldn't you say? So the very limited resource of debt finance is the driver of our economy. Herein lies the cause of the social inequality that's presently attracting lots of media attention. Only the asset-rich, or the potentially asset-rich, can acquire financial wealth. Global financial resources are so limited that the greater proportion of the planet's inhabitants go hungry. The potentially asset-rich are those with the ability to pay off a mortgage or a substantial loan. If we comprehend this, we can look at the economically advantaged and disadvantaged from a more general perspective. We can first focus in with close-up and personal view of our abysmal situation.
Now that we understand the importance of export markets, we can understand the reason for the endless fight over it and the resulting inequality expressed as massive poverty in economically weaker nations. A differentiation of wealth and poverty must take place.
Apparently, under the spell of our much vaunted debt, we see that our worth is reduced to a monetary value. Our humanity is solely predicated on our profitability, or perhaps our potential to profit financially. Some of us look at our world in disbelief. We don't realize that it is a fixable error of monumentally tragic proportions. We cry out for the human qualities of caring, compassion, cooperation, and nurturing. However, these values are not economically possible and would be much to our disadvantage. But not realizing this, we blame human nature. In one way, it is natural. If the instinct of self-preservation and the desire for survival is part of our nature, the system demands immediate profit, short-term thinking, and quick returns. Funding for long-term projects is out of the question. Human equality can only come through global cooperation and compassion, so we are out of luck on that score. A popular but misconceived assumption is that debt-free money is just interest-free money. This couldn't be a problem, could it? Interest-free is sometimes created by its central banks and lent to commercial banks, but they are owned by shareholders. They have to charge interest to their borrowers or collapse as a business. To survive, they must make large and constant profits so that they can invest and pay dividends to their shareholders. They are just the same as any other business. The main source of our money in circulation, then, starts with commercial banks. This is wages borrowed on overdraft. But here is the rub. Money loaned into existence at a cost makes the sum to be repaid higher than the sum borrowed, hence the need for profit growth, to not only make up the difference, but to give the wage borrower an income. Wages incomes borrowed on overdraft by producers become the workers' and the nation's purchasing power. Wage incomes are paid to our workforce for the produce of industry. These and other incomes paid by government to the disadvantaged and pensioners is the money in circulation that gives us access to our products. Those incomes, those wages and pensions in circulation are the means by which we gain access to the goods and services we produce. The interest cost and repayment of the borrowed incomes plus the need for profit growth must be recovered through the sale price of the goods produced. Unfortunately, the domestic market circulates only wage, pension, and dividend incomes. The money needed for profit and to pay borrowing cost is not there. It is not in local circulation. This must come from sales to the export market. A simple equation shows that these incomes, that money in local circulation, can't match the price that must be asked for otherwise by available goods and services. Goods and services may be plentiful, but access to them requires finance. The money is always scarce. A community's purchasing power, limited to local incomes, means that the domestic marketplace is unable to function without profit growth. That comes from export sales of the vast bulk of its overall production, whether primary or value added.
Again, we heard of blaming the ills on human nature, not understanding the cause which could be changed. The economic model we have to run with, dictated by this 321-year-old rule, seems absurd and counterproductive to human evolution. However, when expressions of economic success rely on short-term decisions, such as financial survival at the expense of someone else, It makes the term operating on the knife edge understandable. There seems to be another popular conviction circulating, proposing interest-free money. But it can be shown that as long as it has to be borrowed into existence, it would need profits to be obtained. So nothing has changed and the problems of scarcity continue to manifest.
The concept of wealth and poverty on a global scale differs only in degree. In a poverty-stricken shanty town in Africa, the guy who has the early morning contract picking and delivering dewdrop roses at 50 cents a bunch for the multinational hotels is wealthy beyond compare to the majority of his peers. They either have no jobs or very menial jobs and no welfare payments. Because money is so scarce, the country has, of necessity, been excluded from international export market share because we need that share. They are scarce. Compared to wealthier and therefore stronger countries, they are poor. If one or two locals manage to secure a meagre sum, the neighbourhood experiences a degree of inequality. Imagine if the entrepreneurial roses guy employed a couple of kids at 5 cents a bunch. But this is inequality in practice. It is an example of a scarcity-based, debt-based finance. It affects all human economic enterprise and endeavour. Inequality is just a matter of degree, but the one with the roses contract has an asset to offer for the loan he probably needed to set up business. This is like comparing that businessman to a poverty-burdened African nation, to a $30 million a year CEO of a Western telco. But many thousands of us in the West live on the dole or pensions or are considered as employed if working 8 hours a week. We think of this as inequality.
Inequalities, they bother me like a chunky on top of me or Mexican lobotomy. It's
inequalities, inequalities.
The scarcity of finance adversely influences the availability of paid employment. Inequality is generated thereby locking in poverty and market dominance. Inequality occurs not only between wealthy and poor nations, but also happens within societies, groups, and between individuals.
The process that produces the widening gap between the rich and the poor may be traced back to the dictates of that all-powerful directive. Installed by an act of the English Parliament in July of the year 1694, it has ever since completely and adversely controlled human economic activity and societal attitudes and responses. We all endure and subsist rather than live, in the true sense of the word, within a so-called civilization. We're suffering exploitation, competitive conflict, and extremes of global inequality in a perpetual state of social or economic disparity. The 1694 Act actually establishes the corporation of the Bank of England. It directs that it may legally loan money based on the value of assets deposited with them as security by the borrowers. The corporation may keep and or sell the asset if the loan repayment requirements are not met. Bringing imitative new money, counterfeit, into existence by individuals printing it is by law illegal. If done by government institutions, it is money that is considered unsecured in banking terms, therefore not to be trusted. Reserve, central, and commercial banks, we are told, are the legal and secure way of obtaining money. The security part comes from the asset held by the bank against loan default. If that happens, the bank gets the asset, the borrower gets nothing and loses the asset.
What seems to be overlooked by most is the exclusivity of that British Parliamentary 1694 Act. All attempts at alternatives, even when shown to be successfully overcoming the debt system's debilitating effects, had to be aborted using the spurious arguments of asset-rich groups and individuals.
That Act gave birth to a new business, the banking business. It also spawned that creeping, ever-growing social inequality we are all now aware of. The bank is just a business and is subject to the rules of business practice, as is any other commercial business. It must create profit growth or fail. It must exploit to the nth degree every avenue open to it, regardless of the social or economic ill effects trailing in its wake, just as any other business must do to survive. So you see the gap ever widening between the lower end of the socioeconomic spectrum and the higher end of town. An ever widening gap is the inevitable result of this type of debt-fueled capitalism. It is the progenitor of inequality, financial inequality. If we work from the assumption that as humans we are all equal, then the global inequality we are all witnessing today is an irregularity occurring within the framework of our esteemed debt system. It is a financial disparity ranging wildly and widely in intensity. It is omnipresent. It would seem that we are all forced to act as automatons reacting to the inviolable law of self-preservation engendered by a hellish edict of an ancient parliamentary money act that has no equal this side of Hades. In a court of law, it may well be called a heinous act or personified evil.
Once the banks entered the system, they had to adhere to this debt economy. Due to the need to grow more profits, the gap between the wealthy and poor must also grow. A mindless concept, don't you agree? We heard Tanya and me on this program. The script was produced by Graham. I used some mainstream media clips. The music samples were The Inequality Rap and We Are the 99%. Both can be found on YouTube. If you like this show and the featured issue of Global Debt Finance, you may want to check out other previous programs. The easiest way is to Google Kaput X Radio, Kaput with double T, mind you, and you will find an index directory with all programs listed. Each program has a title and a program details page to view. It is quite easy to select the relevant programs and download them. I hope this program has contributed to a better understanding of our global predicament with a 321-year-old entrenched method of banking and finance. We surely must change, if not even for the sake of our environment and the violence we are forced to commit towards each other as the human race. May a future program highlight some suggestions how and what needs change. My name is Martin, and you can hear me again with more Kaput Radio. Bye for now.